Welcome to the
Idiots
Explaining
Entertainment
Extravaganza, only on GamingUncensored.com. It's
E4. Hey, what is up? Welcome to E4 2020. That's right, it is the Idiots Explaining Entertainment Extravaganza.
It's still alive!
I love it so much. I'm Tommy, that's Jamie. We are sitting in the same room. We are having a good time. We just put together some ridiculous new production. Life's pretty great.
We don't do production. We actually had to go buy booze to be able to do production. we're currently drinking Bullet Bourbon, which is right now, ladies and gentlemen, I kid you not. It's the greatest thing ever, because I haven't had the alcohol in about 3 months, and I feel pretty good.
That's good. This is a good time to feel good. Yeah. It is the right time to feel good. Big thanks to our boy Logan over at the Facebook page who gave us Idiots Explaining Entertainment for our COVID 2020 E4 name since there's no E3 this year. I think we might just keep it. I think it's great.
I really like it. I really do. I really like it. And based on the day that we've had, it made me laugh.
Yes.
Which is something that we needed because we haven't had a great day.
And it's pretty true. We are idiots. So
yeah.
So really quickly, here at the top of the show, we made an editorial decision to push the conversation we just had to the end of the show. So you're going to hear that at the end of the show. Right now, we're going to talk about Sony, which was fantastic and we had a good time with. But please stick around at the end because we did have a really, really, really good conversation about a lot of the other stuff that's going on that we talked about last week on the show that's really valuable. So
yes,
stick around. It's great. Fantastic. Shall we talk about Sony, my friend?
Yes!
We're having a good time. We really are. We just got done with this serious discussion. That's really, really good. But we're also going to talk about some video games. So what would have been E3 kind of started today-ish? Not really, because Sony wasn't going to be at E3 anyway. So this whole thing we saw from Sony wasn't something we were going to see. Anyway, it's whatever. It's like when E3 is supposed to be happening and there is a fun event today. So Sony showed up with the PlayStation 5. Literally, we saw it. We know what the thing looks like. And it's really darn pretty, which is not something I thought I would say.
I'd say you were almost late. You almost missed it.
I literally rolled in your door at 3:00.
Yeah, you had like 30 seconds to spare.
I opened the door. I said, hi. I saw the countdown was still on the TV like they hadn't started yet. And I said, I got to go pee. And then I came back and it started like it was so close, but I made it. Yeah, I was really happy about.
And I'm so glad that you did, because we saw a lot of great stuff.
We did. And so we'll get to the actual box itself. I can't even call it a box. I don't know what the thing is, but it's cool looking. But we'll go through it, just what we saw, kind of starting from the very beginning, which the first thing we saw was Grand Theft Auto 5, which is a weird way to start with a game that's 6 years old or whatever it is at this point. But Grand Theft Auto 5 is coming to the PlayStation 5. They're retooling it some. It looks prettier. I don't know that it's... Rockstar just doesn't make really pretty games except for Red Dead. Red Dead is gorgeous. But like Grand Theft Auto has just never been like the prettiest thing on the market for whatever reason. And so it's still, obviously, being a six-year-old game, not going to be the prettiest thing on the market. But it feels like maybe it's Rockstar playing with next-gen and getting closer to a Grand Theft Auto 6 announcement. But it's not coming till next year, so it's not even something that's going to be here at launch, which is a little nuts. However, and this is cool, if you are a PlayStation Plus member on the PlayStation 5, you get it for free.
Why wouldn't you be at this point?
Why wouldn't you be?
It's 50 a year, which I don't even think about at this point. Like,
no, it's a no-brainer.
It's something that you pay for, and we have an accessibility control in my house, which we haven't even touched yet.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about PlayStation Plus because I have all of these games available to me that I've gotten over these last couple of years paying for it that are now accessible to me. And so it's totally worth it. If you have a PlayStation, you must be paying for this. If you're not, give me about 5 minutes and let me explain to you why you should be. And you can email me or call me, whatever you need to do. I can tell you why that $50 a year is worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like you said, it's just a no-brainer at this point. If you're a fan of Sony, you get great games every month, and then things like this. And granted, who doesn't have Grand Theft Auto 5 at this point?
Hey, but I got it last week on the PC. Thank you, Epic.
But again, but having it on the next-gen console, not having to pay for it, all that's fantastic. Just love it. And so that's cool. Even though it's like almost previous gen as opposed to next gen, still great. So that was the first thing. And then the next announcement we got was one of the big ones. There's a couple of big ones that aren't shocking. We anticipated these, specifically a couple that happened, we knew were going to happen. The first one was a new Spider-Man game. The maybe shocking part of it, again, I don't think super shocking, but interesting part of it, is it's a Miles Morales Spider-Man game, which, following Twitter today, the belief is that it's like a spinoff game, not a sequel, right? That there's a Peter Parker sequel that's coming, but this Miles Morales game is Spider-Man, which they already proved that they can make a great Spider-Man game, and it's going to be essentially a launch title. Says it's coming holiday, and so that to me equals launch title.
Okay, I'm gonna say something that is gonna sound a little weird, and I've had some alcohol, so I can blame it on that if I need to. But I'm glad about the idea that it's possibly a spinoff, because the only thought that I had during this trailer is, yeah, this is cool. But what about Pete? Like, you're not going to kill off Peter Parker like we did in Spider-Verse. Like, this is the first game, kind of first Marvel thing with Stan not being here. And I don't know. I'm just not ready to kill off Pete yet.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping if it is a spinoff, that's fantastic. I'm hoping we get to see another Peter Parker game, although I'm extraordinarily happy about a Miles Morales spinoff.
Yeah, so for me, both of those things can coexist. We can have Miles games, we can have Peter games, they can have a crossover game for all I care. I just want more of Spider-Man on the PlayStation 4.
Which, by the way, there is DLC, which we have not played.
Interesting.
We need to get
something
pick
else we
that
need
up.
To do.
Yes.
My word. The gaming never ends. So that was really exciting. And like I said, a launch title. And so a compelling reason for a PlayStation 5 at launch. As of now, I don't know that there's any indication that this will also come out on PlayStation 4. It could. But they're selling it as PlayStation 5. After that, we got Gran Turismo, because it's not a Sony press event if we don't get Gran Turismo. It's pretty, and it's the same thing we say every single time. I honestly can't tell you that I've ever played a Gran Turismo game. I'm pretty sure I have, but it didn't leave like any kind of indelible mark on me that I can go, oh yeah, I definitely played Gran Turismo, whatever.
I know you have. I know you've played it, but that's the thing.
Yeah.
The only thing that they have going for them is like, oh, they're pretty, and yeah, then you're over it. Like, they did 5 minutes of this gameplay thing, and it was 5 minutes of a guy looking through a windshield on a racetrack. Like, I don't want to play that. Thank you. Yep. Goodbye.
But there are a lot of people that will, which is great. And that goes into the next game as well. And this is one that you and I would more likely pick up than Gran Turismo, but it's a franchise that we've never really played. But judging by Twitter, like, people are going crazy about this, and that's Ratchet and Clank. And so there's this new Ratchet and Clank that's called Rift Apart. That's like interdimensional Ratchet and Clank. And really, like, what it felt like it was there to do, as much as being, you know, a beloved franchise that they wanted to show off, was also to show some of the kind of technical things the PlayStation 4 is capable, or PlayStation 5, excuse me, is capable of, both in the kind of solid state drive responsiveness, and then like just particle effects everywhere. Like, just, even though it's cartoony because it's Ratchet and Clank, like, they just had a billion things happening on screen and stuff floating all around you and everything else. Like, visually, it was very impressive. And the gameplay looks really cool, just the kind of like being able to interdimensionally jump around and like interact with your environment in that way. I don't know. Like, again, I've never played Ratchet and Clank. I don't know that as a franchise. Like, I don't have any beloved memories of it. It's not something that really interests me. But the gameplay could be enough to wrap me up for a little bit.
That would draw us in because it's Portal-ish.
Yeah, like this one specifically feels, I don't know that the other ones have that element to it, but this one specifically felt that way. Absolutely, that's a good way to put it. Then we've got a couple of games that we just don't know much about, that they just gave us a little teasers. We didn't, one knock on this whole Sony event, we didn't see a lot of gameplay. Saw a little bit, not none. But we didn't see a lot. And so there's Project Athia, which is from Square Enix. Apparently it's the same team that worked on Final Fantasy 15, which is a bizarre, interesting, beautiful game. Like, just a weird, weird title. It looks weird and creepy and that kind of stuff. I don't know what it is, but it looks next gen. Like, it's one of those titles that when you watch it, you went, oh yeah, that's not something we can do right now.
Okay, so that was the big problem with the first part of the event. I wanted to say of the show, but it's not. It wasn't really. Yeah. It was an event. It was a video event, and that was my biggest problem with the first part of the event. Was you and I were sitting here watching it, and granted, you like ran into my house. We didn't even say, what's up, dude? Which we've known each other long enough.
Yeah, who cares?
It's like, okay, you're here, cool. So we're sitting there, and the way that I felt was the first part of the event was them saying, okay, we don't really have just a whole lot. Like, we're here to show you the PlayStation 5, and we don't really have a whole lot. And the Grand Theft Auto thing kind of screamed that to me. And then you bring out a Spider-Man tease with, like, zero gameplay.
Yeah, done.
And then you bring out Ratchet and Clank. And so 30 minutes in, I'm going, okay, this is them saying, okay, it's E3 time. We had to do something. And this is what we had, so we put it together. But it's not really the best of what we got. And I was really disappointed about a half hour in. I was getting kind of snarky and kind of not paying attention to some things. And then it got interesting.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely takes a turn into the more familiar. This kind of middle section was, like I said, a lot of things we just don't know what they are, as the next one is as well. And so after Project Athia, we got Stray, which is apparently, I assume, you play as the cat with a backpack on in this world of robots. And I'm kind of fascinated by it. And it's going to be one of those moments from this event that you see memed, all you already have, if you've been online at all, you've seen the cat with a backpack. That's going to be a takeaway from this event. But we don't know what it is. There's no gameplay. They didn't explain it. The next game they showed off is called Returnal, which is really creepy and weird looking, yeah, and fascinating. But still, I don't know what it is. They showed us glimpses of gameplay in that. But those are all things that, yeah, it just, like, part of me is like, new IP is amazing. But part of me also says, if you're going to show me a new IP, like, tell me more about it. Yeah. Like, I need to know what Stray is, and I don't at this point. It just, yeah. It was weird. I will take one issue though with what you said about Ratchet and Clank. It's not our thing, but it's a lot of people's things. There is a beloved fan base of Ratchet and Clank out there that I'm just completely unaware of. So, people listening to the show, like if you play Ratchet and Clank, like convince us why we need to play Ratchet and Clank, because apparently we should. Because people love it, and it just I've just missed that. It's just not a game I've ever played. So. Sackboy, A Big Adventure. We get Little Big Planet returning in what seems to be a non-creation based game. It looks just like a platformer, but it's Sackboy and it's cute and it's pretty and it has co-op and so cool. Looks fun. We got Destruction All Stars, which is Twisted Metal.
Worst name ever.
Terrible name. Twisted Metal without all the fun stuff, the violence and the gore and everything else. I just want a new Twisted Metal game. Like, can we not, like, if you would have showed a Twisted Metal game right there, I would have lost it, right?
Yeah.
You show me Destruction All-Stars, and I go, like, I'm not playing that, you know? But if you did the exact same gameplay.
Even if it was a Twisted Metal Black remake.
Yeah, like, because remakes are all the rage. Yeah. I would do that. But even that, if you were to show me that exact same gameplay, but it was Dark and it was Sweet Tooth and it was Axel and it was like Blood, I would have been ridiculously pumped about it. Exact same gameplay. Same level design except for it being darker. I would have been all about it. That I just can't get into.
From the discussion that you're going to hear at the end of the show, let me just... We're Americans and we like violence.
This has always been, we've talked about this on the show so many times, that my disconnect with my real life in the world of games is I'm for the most part a pacifist. I really abhor violence in almost every situation. I love violent video games. Like, they're just so viscerally rewarding in so many ways. Like, that's my outlet for it. And so Twisted Metal, to me, is just one of those games that you're just like, oh, it's so twisted, rightfully so, but just fantastic. Give me a new Twisted Metal. I'd freak out. Then we saw a game called Kena Bridge of Spirits. You mentioned it kind of has a Pikmin Ico feel to it, kind of cutesy, but also seems very emotional and, like one of those that could be really cool. Could be an Ico type game. That's not like this massive blockbuster thing, but it's just a really, really solid title that like has this beloved following. Or it could be pretty meh. I don't know which way it's going to go, but it has the potential to be cool.
Yeah, and the thing there is you got to give us a reason to play it because, and I think. For that particular game, it's going to be about where's the story at.
Yeah.
Because you got this character that looks interesting. Yeah. She's got like a 17 or 18 year old version of Dora the Explorer, which I found interesting.
Yeah.
And whether that game is successful or not, is going to hinge on that character, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. It's the kind of game that really is dependent on how well you as the player relate to the character you're playing.
And
we just need to see more of it. I think it could be really good, but we just don't know.
Which, by the way, there was no swiper, no swiping. So there was no swiper in this thing. So it was not, mature Dora the Explorer. I just want to put that out.
Yeah. Just looking through our list right now, like, there was so much software in this thing, because, like, we've got a long way to go. So, keeping moving on, we got to the kind of interspersed weirdness of the show that we get this game called Goodbye Volcano High. That's, like, comic-y looking with, like, teenage dinosaurs that are, like... emo-ish. I don't know what's going on. Like, it was so far off of anything I want to play. Like, it just had, like, so little appeal to me. But you mentioned Life is Strange when we saw it, and it does have that kind of Life is Strange feel, and I love Life is Strange.
It's like, it's Life is Strange meets Parappa the Rapper. Like, seriously, that's what it was.
Meets
like.
The Land Before Time. Yeah. Like, it's just bizarre. Could, like, again, it's one of those things I could see taking off as like this cult thing, Or it's a game that I could imagine us never hearing about again, right? Like, we may never again say goodbye Volcano High because this thing just doesn't, like, fully flesh out. Or if it does, it's just not something that makes a blip on the radar or whatever. There were a handful of those games in this, too. One of those that's not that is a new Oddworld game. Oddworld Soulstorm. Like, super heavy, really dark. Like, it's just, like, I remember Oddworld being a little goofy. And it still has that kind of goofiness to it. But, man, it was also just, like, poignant and, like, heartbreaking. Like, it was rough.
It was hardcore. Like, it was hardcore. And I noticed in this time frame in the world that we're in that there are certain games that I don't want to play, which I meant to mention this at the beginning of the show, but I've stupidly gotten into Mass Effect Andromeda because I've now figured out that you can mod it. Thank you guys at Kotaku who released a video on June the 8th. Which was the exact day that I was looking to actually uninstall the game. And they're like, but wait! Mass Effect Andromeda is better with mods. And so I started messing around with it. And lo and behold, it is better with mods. But one thing that they brought up is that in this time period where we are in our houses, for the most part, alone. You and I are together at this point, and it feels good. I'm glad you're here. We are not socially distant. We are not wearing masks, and I do not care.
I know you haven't been out of your house in 3 months.
So yeah, all right. Yeah, I'm not feeling bad at all. I had my first meal from a place other than here tonight for the first time in 3 months. So, yeah, there is that. But one thing they brought up that about Mass Effect Andromeda is that it has that exploration feel. And you're locked in your house and you're not doing anything and you're by yourself. You have this game that is kind of like old school Star Trek-y 1960s. Kind of like, we don't know what we're doing. Our tech kind of sucks. We're trying to terraform these worlds kind of a thing going on. And so, like, I modded it and started playing it. And lo and behold, they're right. It sort of kind of feels a void for this period in our lives. So I say all of that to say that I've been playing that, and Duff is now playing that, and I don't want to play games that are dark in nature right now. Like, I have The Walking Dead, the final season, on my system, which I should have played months ago, but I don't want to play it right now because I'm just not feeling it. I don't want to play Resident Evil. I know the Resident Evil 2 remake's out. I know 3 is out.
We got news coming in a little bit.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to play Resident Evil right now. But the idea of playing something like Mass Effect Andromeda, where you're exploring, where you're improving things on a planet, where you're making things better for people, that's what I want to do right now.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you feel the same way, but I have no interest in playing those dark titles right now because the world is dark enough.
Yeah. No, that's very true. I put in 5 or 10 hours into Andromeda a long time ago, and now you're making me think maybe I should pick that back up. Yeah. Go in and mod it and dive back into it.
Yeah, I will tell you the same thing that I told Duff. I think it's going to be very Metal Gear 5 in that you're going to get to a point where you go, yeah, this is not finished, and I've just wasted, you know, 30 or 40 hours.
Isn't that... Metal Gear Solid 5. Why you gotta bring that up, man? Like, it's just... It was almost one of the best games.
Yeah.
Like, if it would have been finished, like, it was so much fun to play. The world was cool. It was so close. And then it's just like, oh, yeah, and here's the end. That's not really supposed to be the end. Like, here's the halfway point of the game, and we just kind of stopped. And so, it's just a... Sorry. That gets me off on a tangent of my sadness.
So I have a fear that Andromeda is going to be that way. But for right now, like, the entire point of the game is finding these vaults on these planets that allow you to terraform each of these planets so that they can be livable for humanity.
Yeah.
And each little thing that you do makes them more viable. And right now, 25 hours into it, because I had 20 hours into it before I started playing again this week, and now I'm playing it again this week, so I've got 7 or 8 hours in it this week. It's a lot of fun. There's mods that you absolutely have to have, but it's filling that thing. Like, I just need to feel good right now.
Yeah.
And it's doing that.
Yeah, that's fair. The next game isn't going to do that for you. It's Ghostwire Tokyo that we saw last year at Bethesda's conference. So not a exclusive to Sony, but apparently coming first at PlayStation 5. Still don't really get it. It's Tokyo, which
it's
is cool.
Weird.
It's weird. I don't know why it is. Same thing with Jet the Far Shore. I can't even, like, I'm seeing it written down right now, and I'm trying to picture it in my head. I don't even know what it was.
No.
Godfall. We saw Godfall again was one of the first PlayStation 5 kind of teases we got, and it looked completely different to me. Like, I didn't recognize it. I don't have a lot of interest in it.
No.
This is the part of the show that really we started going.
It's very hack and slashy.
Yeah.
Like, I was really...
It's pretty.
Yeah, it was.
But yeah.
This was one of the show where I was like, oh, crap.
Yeah, this was kind of the real lull.
They really don't have it, and we just wasted an hour of our time because this is all they've got, and I wasn't feeling good. Yeah.
We got Solar Ash next, which is this super weird... Yeah, it was very bizarre. Almost has a Journey-ish feel to it, but not really. I don't know what it is. Then it starts kind of taking an uptick. Hitman 3 gets announced. Again, not something that's going to be exclusive. But we get Hitman 3. We get a release date, which is January 2021. And so, okay. Got a little progress. Astral's Playroom. Back down. Just,
yeah.
I don't know what it is. Little Devil Inside, one of these indie titles that they showed off, looks legitimately pretty cool. Like, it's one of those indie titles that, like, that one I need to play.
I'm watching it going, is this a Pixar game? Mm-hmm. Like, it looked like a Pixar cartoon that you would see.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Zion Williamson came out next to debut NBA 2K21, which the little tech demo-ish thing they showed was really pretty. With, like, his sweat, which is not something that I'm going to talk about often, the pretty sweat on a man. But, man, that man had some pretty sweat on him. Like, it was good-looking sweat. Graphically, obviously, that little gameplay or that little snippet is not going to be representative of gameplay. But it's going to be pretty as NBA 2K. Like, we know what that is. Then we got Bugsnax from the creator of Octodad, which is, like, this world where you eat things and then your arm turns into strawberries or something. I don't know what this thing is, and I just like it didn't do anything for me.
That's one of those, like, okay, if we're gonna play it, we either need to drink a whole lot of bourbon or we need to smoke some weed.
I don't know. Then we get to the uptick. Like, things start really ramping up after this point. First we get a Demon Souls remake that's coming. But again, I've never been a Souls person, like the Souls-like game or whatever. Like, I know that world is huge. FromSoftware is such a big deal. maybe this is the one to try to get me into it. Something that came out on the PlayStation 3 that's now going to be on the PlayStation 5. Then we get Deathloop from Arkane. We saw this last year at E3. It looks a lot different now to me, it feels like. But it's Arkane, and it looks like it plays so much like Dishonored. But that if it's gameplay like Dishonored, I'm going to be into it. Like, I love Dishonored gameplay so much. Like, give me any kind of story around that, and we're probably going to be in pretty good shape.
It's got a, for those of you that know, and I know you don't know because you've never played it, but it has the Dishonored feel to it with a No One Lives Forever look to it, which was, back in the day, was a first-person shooter with like an Austin Powers kind of cartoony thing that I like, a 1970s cartoony thing that I loved. And it's very much a No One Lives Forever kind of thing. And it's got that Arkane gameplay thing going for it, which is great.
Yeah, it's just fantastic. And then we got a super spooky cinematic that had werewolves of all things in it, plus zombies and other crazy stuff, that turns out to be Resident Evil 8. The Village, or Village, I think it's just Village Resident Evil. That's... feels a very different direction yet again for Resident Evil. Werewolves kind of freaking me out. Like, that's the part that, for whatever reason, just really, because that moment with the werewolf was just so freaking cool. But like, werewolves of Resident Evil, like, kind of boggles my mind.
Yeah, I don't need to see that. Like, Resident Evil, trivia love. I don't need some freaking werewolves.
Yeah. And then we got Pragmata, which is very Dead Space looking. I thought
it was Dead Space because it looks like Isaac.
Yeah,
with the armor and the whole thing.
The I think it's the main writer for Dead Space had been teasing on Twitter that he had a game coming during this. I assume this is it. I don't know that for sure. But also has that kind of horror thriller kind of feel to it, a very different vibe than what Resident Evil is, of course. But has that thing to it. So that was cool. And so now we're in a pretty exciting point. And then we get to what I think is really the apex of the show as far as announcements go. Again, not a big surprise here. But Horizon 2 is coming. It's called Forbidden West. It takes place in the ruins of, really it looks like San Francisco. You see the Golden Gate Bridge in there, but the ruins of the American West. But it's Horizon, it's mechanical dinosaurs and it bow and arrows and all the gameplay amazingness of Horizon that looks just scaled up a ton. That the kind of bookends of this show, Spider-Man at the beginning, Horizon at the end, like, those are the things that you show me that I go, yeah, I have to have a PlayStation 5.
It's going to, this trailer thing is going to make a lot more sense to those of you that have finished Horizon, which we have not. We have a long way to go with Horizon Zero Dawn.
That's a game we need to get back
including, to. Including DLC. We have DLC to play. So there's so much that we don't know about the world of Horizon. Those of you that finished it, I think, are going to understand a lot more about what's going on here. I'm really excited. I love that character. I love that voice actor. That woman is fantastic.
Yeah.
It looks absolutely unbelievable. It is clearly next gen.
Yes.
There's no discussion. There's no, is it maybe kind of, no, it definitely is.
We saw a lot of stuff throughout the show that is perfectly feasible on the PlayStation 4, including even like Ratchet and Clank visually, like outside of some of the other stuff that they were doing, is feasible on the PlayStation 4, like just visual fidelity. There was only a few things that really felt like pushing the boundary. Every second of that Horizon cinematic was, that's next gen. Like, that's stuff we can't do now. Like, that's the prettiest video game I've ever seen in my life. You know, like, it just is absolutely stunning. The detail, the depth of the world, the scale of the world, like, just everything about it was just jaw-dropping. That to me is a system seller at this point. Like, that just is, that's a reason you have to have a PlayStation 5.
And that's what we expect from Sony.
Yes.
To everybody on the Facebook page that's going to call us Microsoft haters after this show, those of you, and you know who you are, Sam, go watch this and tell us that we're crazy, because this doesn't exist on the Xbox anywhere. They don't have anything close to it. This is what Sony does.
Yeah.
This is what keeps us buying PlayStation, which is how we're going to wrap the show with a really sexy look at these hardware.
Yeah. So so the whole time, like, in between all these little gameplay segments, and they did just, or not gameplay segments, excuse me, but game segments, showcases, very little gameplay in there again. But they did very little talking head stuff. There was a few times a developer popped up or somebody talked for a little bit. But for the most part, it was just game content, as you heard, just as we're going through that. Tons and tons and tons of software. But in between each one of those, they kind of had these little, you know, animated things that were teasing the reveal of the hardware. And so by the end of it, you kind of knew it was coming. And then they just drew it out forever. And we were sitting here watching this process, knowing that they're about to show us the hardware, going, we really don't care about whatever it looks like is fine. We're obviously buying a PlayStation 5. It doesn't matter. Why are you doing this? Why is it going? And then, like, the little curtain drops, and we're both like, ooh. Just like, all of a sudden it was like, that thing's really pretty. Like, it's a sexy piece of hardware. Like, it's super sleek. It's got these, like it's just the opposite of the Series X, which is just this block that's, like, design-wise, cool in its own right. Like, I don't mind either one of those, like, sitting on my desk or in my living room or whatever it is. But the PlayStation 5 design is, it looks like an Alienware computer. Like,
yes.
Cabbage posted that on Facebook. It looks like an Alienware PC. But, like, this real white design, which I thought when we first saw the controller and knew that there was a good chance that the console design was going to be white, that I thought I would hate it. I don't. I think it looks really good. It's white design. It's got this kind of curvature to it. Kind of flares out at the top. It's got these kind of blue beams on the, like, just a sexy piece of hardware. Like, I was really surprised to be into the hardware.
You know what it is? It's art. You know?
It's like a little sculpture for your living room.
Yeah, like, most people that have a whole lot more money than us and are a whole lot more successful than us, they buy art to display that basically does what this thing is going to do.
Yeah.
And it's really good looking, but I want to get to one piece of it that you talked about that is very interesting. They have two SKUs of this thing. And you said something that has stuck in my brain all day through all of the crap that we've dealt with. You're like, dude, I think I want the one without the disk drive because it's so sexy. Yeah. And that disk drive just hanging there. And I'm thinking to myself, I kind of want the disk drive because I like that being my Blu-ray player. And this one has a remote, which they didn't do for the PlayStation 4, which I think was a huge thing. I think this one has a remote that comes with it that matches the console and the whole, like, I'm good with that as a media box. And so I kind of want the drive. You, as a guy that hasn't bought a game in, like, 5 years, is looking at it going, like, I don't really think I need that.
Yeah, hasn't bought a physical game in a long, long time. And doesn't watch Blu-rays. I don't use discs for anything. I can't tell you the last time I put a disc in a machine.
Like, I'll tell you right now, there's a disc in that place. There's a movie, like Bad Boys 4 or whatever. I don't even know what number we're on. Like, I haven't had time to watch that movie because it came out in the theaters, and that was right when everything went to crap. And
yeah.
And that's what's currently in my PlayStation.
But that's really the only reason for the disk drive, right?
Yes.
That or if you don't have good internet. Like, I get it, too, if you don't have good internet. If downloading 100-plus gig games is going to be difficult, which for people that still will be. But make no mistake, you're not running games off a disk on this thing. They're selling this hardware. The thing that they talk about the most is that solid-state drive and all the things it's capable of doing. You're not running games off a disk. You're putting a disk into the system to install. That probably still has a 50-gig download that you have to do to get the rest of the content for it, right? Like, as a gaming device, disks are pretty pretty close to obsolete. And so if you're only looking for it for gaming, I really dig that digital edition because you're not going to have much of a difference on how much of that solid drive space you're taking up, again, because you're not running assets off a disk. They're going to install on that solid state drive even if you buy a disk. So if you play Blu-rays, of course, yeah, then the drive makes total sense if it's going to be your box for that. But outside of that, I just don't see the argument for it. Maybe there's something I'm missing, but I just don't get it. And I do just think that the diskless one is just sexier. Just taking that little lob off the side of the console, it just gives it that nice symmetry to it. Man, it's got the curves in all the right places, right? Like it's just a good looking box.
Somebody is gonna pull that quote from somewhere and then just show pictures of us and what we look like. We're a couple of fat fobs that have no right whatsoever. Talk about how sexy something looks. But man, it's good looking.
It is good looking. They showed off the camera and the headphones and all the other little accessories you can get. They're all white. They all match the kind of overall feel of it. Not that we'll probably be getting any of those things. But they all exist too.
Can we talk about the technology for a quick second?
Yep.
Because we don't have to talk about the processor and the RAM and all of that stuff, but one thing that stuck out to you as an audio person and stuck out to me as an audio person without a degree that loves the software that he uses, and we struggled and struggled and struggled with hardware today. This is not how you create hardware for people that use audio devices. I may talk about that on the next show, whenever that is. But one thing that you mentioned is the ability to put 3D audio out of the controller, because there's a plug on the controller that you can plug the headphones in and 3D audio will come out of the controller.
That was my assumption how they showed it. I don't know that that's confirmed, but if so, like that seems super cool. 3D audio is going to happen with it either way. I just don't know if it'll be coming out of the controller with it. Or if it's just all going to be wireless at that point, it doesn't really matter. Because the headphones that they showed were wireless as well. 3D audio is super cool. Last week, I think I might have mentioned this on the last show, I don't remember or not. But I spent all last week, waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning every day.
I never asked how that thing went.
It was really good. So I went to this audio conference virtually that takes place every year. There's one that takes place in Europe and then one in the States. So the Europe one is in the summer and then the one in either LA or New York in the fall. And I've never been able to participate in it because it's expensive and you got to go places and get hotels and all that kind of stuff. And so because of COVID, they did it virtually, which was fantastic, except it's in Europe, and so it started at 3 o'clock in the morning. That was a little rough. But all that to say, one of the themes throughout that was 3D audio, ambisonics, all these tools to create the ability to play immersive, encompassing audio through headphones, not needing a 5.1 or a 7.2 or a 22.2 system, that you just need a pair of headphones that you can put on your head to create a sense of up, down, front, back, left to right space, fully three-dimensional space. It's tricky. There's a lot of weird things about it, about head-related transfer functions that if you're lucky and can get your head measured, like you can get really realistic response. But even with that, there's a lot of technical challenges to pull it off. But when done well, it is mind-blowingly cool. And it's just the future of games. Like, there's no doubt that where visual fidelity has gone, and even more so with things like VR, where that 3D audio is so much more important, like, we have to have that same level of immersion audio-wise that we do visually. This is that step. And it's not just Sony, obviously. Microsoft's got 3D audio in their console as well. But it's such an exciting part of the future of gaming as somebody who loves sound.
Can I tell you that you're sitting in my room, which you don't often do, and probably my prized possession is that little silver thing over there that's sitting next to my PC. Because it's what makes my 5.1 system work. I have the Z5500 speakers from Logitech that they don't make anymore. And if you look online, there are people trying to find ways to resurrect these things because they suck for music. they suck for anything that requires audio fidelity, but for games and for TV, especially in a small room, they are fantastic. And I've spent the last year praying that that little silver control pod doesn't die, because over the last 10 years, that system has followed me across three systems. Over the last 10 years, I have become a 3D audio snob. I don't want to play in headphones. I want that directional audio. I want to, when I turn away from the character in a game, I want to hear them at my back and have to turn my head, whatever I'm playing, I want to have to turn my head and get in front of them to hear what they're saying, because that's true to life. That's I have become a snob. And like I said, I've been praying for the last year that that thing doesn't die, because if you look at what's out there, there's not another great 5.1 3D audio system out there. There's just not.
But to be clear, 5.1 and 3D audio are very different things.
That's true.
5.1 doesn't go near fidelity-wise what 3D audio does when executed well. And that's the trick with 3D audio, is it's really challenging to execute well.
I guess I should say the point is I've gotten snobby about positional audio. Yes.
Immersive sound is so important in gaming.
And I think positional audio is the most important part of 3D audio, is the...
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. But 3D audio also gives you the up and down dimension that you don't get with a 5.1 system.
Yeah.
It adds in, a 5.1 system is essentially a two-dimensional system, which is fantastic, but doesn't give you that up and down that when you have a good HRTF to pull it off, when you've got high-order ambisonic, I'm getting technical now, I apologize. But when you have these things in place that can do it well, again, is super cool. Executing that at this point is a challenge. And so I'm really curious to what we actually get with these when you put on a good pair of headphones and hear their 3D audio processing, how well they're able to translate up and down dimension. That's the hardest thing to do. Our hearing system naturally processes that, but it's based mostly on our anatomy. And everybody's anatomy is different, and so you can't just, like, generically model that. You need to have that personalized, and that's a very hard thing to do. So I'm really interested to see what their approach is to try to pull that off, and if they can in a good way, as opposed to having to, like, put speakers all through your ceiling. Because you could get that 3D audio effect if you have speakers running all across your ceiling and all around your room and everything else. Yeah. But it is the future. Like, it's becoming more and more practical. In 5 years, there's going to be a way in, like, every pair of headphones that it's going to scan your earlobes to, like, make your own HRTF, so that when you put on a pair of headphones, it's going to automatically be 3D audio that is personalized for you. We're not there yet, but that's coming, and that's going to be a super cool point.
I remember when you left here. I remember when you had the house in Canyon. We got all the gear that we got that is now obsolete. There's now some of it sitting against my wall because we replaced it today. And I feel bad about that because we had a sucky experience. But one thing I told you when we got all that is that I got this 5.1 system. And I told you that I was going to get used to it and that I couldn't really go without it. And I have. And, like, 5.1, like you said, is not 3D dimensional audio, but it's a step. And I don't want to go back.
Yeah.
And when this dies, the next thing is actually getting an audio processor with some actual high-end speakers and some of that stuff that people get for home theaters to plug into your computer. I don't need that for this little room. So I'm really, like, depressed about, like, this thing is going to die. You can't get these control pods. So I say all that to say I don't want to go back. And I think after you being involved in what you were involved with last week, as well as your job, you're moving towards, okay, I can't do headphones anymore. I got to have...
But that's the thing. 3D audio is all headphones.
Yeah.
Like, the future of audio is completely headphones at this point. But it's three-dimensional headphones, not stereo headphones, right? Yeah. Like, that's the difference of this world. But it's everything is going to be in headphones in the future of gaming. Like, you're going to... Like, obviously, you can still have sound coming out of your TV speakers. But that's going to be really crappy sound. It already is really crappy sound. The foreseeable future is going to be headphone-based for a long time. And thus, having good headphones is going to be a really critical component of having that kind of good gaming experience. Maybe not headphones that you would use for critical audio situations, but headphones that are fun for gaming. And that's going to be a different thing. And so,
lots of low-end, lots of,
all that fun stuff. And that's things that are hard to recreate in headphones. You can't get that chest rumble that you get from a good subwoofer out of a pair of headphones. And so there are trade-offs from that. But that's the future for sure. All that said, just really briefly, because we need to wrap up, but things we didn't see in this conference or in this show, event, whatever we want to call it, we didn't see any VR. They didn't talk about VR at all. I'm not that surprised by it, because that's, VR is still this very, very niche thing. I'm really curious about what their plans are for VR with the PlayStation 5. Just the power of that rig, like the fun things that are available in VR, the ability to scale up VR, I'm really excited about. I don't know if we're going to see it. I don't know if that's something that they're working on. I hope it is.
I hope it is, but one thing that I got from Sony is the same thing that I've gotten from them in previous years, which was, this is what we do. We know what we do, and we do it well. And this is what you come to us for. Everything else is gravy. PSVR is great. We like it. It's fantastic. But that's not what you buy a PlayStation for.
Yeah.
And they did it again. They did that. We're Sony. This is what we do. This is what you pay for. And we're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
Like we were talking about the price point at the end of this thing, because they did
not give
us...
That's the second thing I was going to mention.
They did not give us a price point. But after what I saw, I don't care. Like, I don't think it's going to be a $600 PS3. And if it's anything below that, granted, like, we can talk about, you know, if it's $499, we're going to be sketchy about being able to pay for that. But we have this show, and we have you guys, and we have budget. We're going to own PS5s.
Yeah. If I had to bet, I would say that it's going to be a $500 console. That's the price point that I think is probably most likely. I do want to see if they price the digital edition lower because it doesn't have as high a production cost. It doesn't have a drive in it. Knock $50 of that. So have a $450 option and a $500 option. I don't know that they'll do that because I think, honestly, maybe this is just my skew. I didn't mean that as a pun, but it worked out really well as a pun.
Yeah.
That my viewpoint, my skew on this is that the digital edition just makes more sense for most people. And then if they price that lower, like it just feels like more people are going to go out and purchase that one. But there's almost certainly going to be a shortage of these things because production has been impacted by COVID and everything else. They're still on track to release this holiday. They're going to be hard to get a hold of. I have a feeling they're not making pre-orders available yet. They're going to be tough to get a hold of. I could easily see like a $450 digital edition just being sold out everywhere. And you're lucky if you run into the $500 disc based system somewhere. And thus there's a good chance we're going to end up with a $500 disc based system because it's going to be the only one we can get our hands on. And we'll be fine with that or whatever. But that's what I imagine price point we'll kind of see. I think we know Microsoft is doing an event in about a month. I think Sony will wait until after that to announce their price point. I don't know that Microsoft will announce their price point at that event. I think if they are fairly confident that they're undercutting Sony, if they think they have a $400 console, if they come out with the Series S that's $300 or $200 or whatever, I think they're going to want to put that out there. And Sony's going to have to come in and say, yeah, our console's a lot more expensive. And so I anticipate we'll get Sony's price after that event either way. But that's where I think there's probably going to land.
But after what we saw today, and what I'm about to say is called by the fact that you have a computer on your lap with a nice, pretty Apple logo showing up very well in this dark room.
Yes.
We love Apple computers.
Yes.
We will pay extra money for Apple computers. You've been lucky enough to have a job that gives you one on a regular basis. But if you do what we do, and if you do things that are creative, the Mac is worth it. And based on what we saw from Sony, what they're putting out design-wise and software-wise is probably going to be worth a little extra. I feel like Microsoft is coming at it like, yeah, we're going to give you a brick. We're not going to spend a whole lot of money. You can get our software here. You can get it on PC. It's all going to be fantastic. And then there's Sony that's like, yeah, but look what we got.
Yeah.
And I think in the end, that's going to be worth a little extra money.
I think so, too. And especially if Microsoft continues on this kind of projected path of, like, all games are going to be cross-generational for the first year or two, that they're not going to have Xbox Series S, X, sorry, Series X exclusives or Series S exclusives. Those names are going to be so terribly confusing forever.
Alcohol.
Yes, alcohol. That, too. If they continue with that idea, like that's the premium price that you're paying for the PlayStation, just getting worse at this point, is that you get access to that exclusive software. And that if you want to play Halo Infinite or whatever it is, that's coming, you can play it on the Xbox One.
Or the PC, probably.
Or the PC at some point. Like you're going to have those other options that you don't have to go buy the Series X for. But if you want to play Horizon 2, it's an experience that's only going to be possible on PlayStation 5. Thus, you got to go buy it. Yeah, I'm in on that. You know, like it feels like right now how they're positioning themselves is that Sony is traditional generational leap. Microsoft is this kind of weird cross-generational thing that they're trying to pull off, which in the long run very well could be the future. It very well could end up being very, very, very wise for Microsoft. in the short term, it's a lot less appealing to me.
Yeah, I don't... What we're getting from Sony and what we saw today, which... Let's be clear about the fact that a lot of what they showed today was all mini, mini, mini exclusives. You're not going to see some of these titles anywhere else.
Yeah.
And they were very clear about that PlayStation Studios logo.
Yeah.
You saw that a lot.
This is the first big event that's happened since the Sony announced PlayStation Studios as their kind of umbrella internal publishing.
And
yeah, they're pushing it hard.
And you're not going to get that with Microsoft. You're just not. They have one or two titles that are Microsoft Studios based, and everything else is going to be studios that they have bought. Yeah, Microsoft owns them. They're all Microsoft type stuff, but they're not exclusive titles that you can only get on this platform.
I'm excited about the Microsoft event in a month to see what they do. Having seen what Sony did here, right? That I hope that it pushes them right now that they're going, okay, what can we do to up that? What can we do to come out looking strong? Because I think that competition's good, A, just for whatever games you play, it's better for there to be competition in the industry because it pushes everybody to do better. But B, I want really good games. I want them to convince me to buy a Series X. You know, like that's ultimately at the end of the day, I want Microsoft to make it where I...
That's what we wanted for 3 years. Give us a reason to buy a console.
Yeah, they haven't landed that yet with the Xbox One. They can do that with the Series X potentially, but they got to do it. And I don't see that. Like, I don't see how they get there. I know that I have to have a PlayStation 5. I don't know what's coming out on the Series X that I have to have yet. Because again... Like, when the Series X comes out, do they drop the price of the Xbox One another $100 if I really want to play Halo? Maybe I'll go pick up an Xbox One for $150 or whatever, you know? Like, there's other options there. There's not other options to get Horizon 2, and I'm going to play Horizon 2, right? Like, there's just... That's what Sony has positioned themselves as. Again, long-term, that may not be a strategy that goes on forever. But... 2020, 2021, 2022, I think they're in a good place.
I saw something from Chad 2 weeks ago. Chad was kind of goading us because he said he had played his PlayStation since Spider-Man. It's been all Microsoft ever since. And after seeing this today, Sony's like, yeah, but this is why you need us. And I can almost guarantee Chad's going to go buy a PS5. And they may only get him for a couple of games, but there are a couple of games you can't get anywhere else.
Yeah. I saw Cabbage post on Facebook after the event today. Basically the same thing. He has kind of gone away from Sony for a while. But he's saying, yeah, that was really compelling. Just about everything they showed was stuff I want to play. Like PlayStation 5 is going to be part of my gaming future. That's how I feel. You know,
yeah.
Like it's where we are. Without knowing the price, again, if it's a $600 console, I'm going to have some hangups. If it's $500, I'm going to buy it. If it's $400, I'm going to be ecstatic. Right? Like that's right. Kind of the gradient right now. It's not going to be any less than $400.
We're going to have some hang-ups, but at the end of the day, we have a budget and we're going to buy it. Like,
speaking of which, really quickly before we wrap up, thanks to the Patreon guys, Cabbage, Jose, Narc, Duff, Josh, Hector, Spider, Spencer, Kavash, Chad, Zeke, Chris, Brigham, and Sam, several of you who we've already mentioned in the show today. Thanks to each and every one of you for allowing us to buy a PlayStation 5 in a few months. We appreciate you greatly.
And you
y'all
guys
are awesome.
You guys are constantly giving us stuff. I've gotten games in the last 2 weeks, like games just appear, and my library's getting bigger, and I don't have time to play them, and they just keep coming. You guys are sending software my way, going play this, and I'm going, I can't, I got no room. But it's awesome. It's great. That's why I love doing this show. And the reason we do it is you guys. You guys are the entire reason we do it, whether you contribute on Patreon or you're just hanging out listening. You're the reason we do it. You're the ones that keep us here. And so we appreciate you all very, very much. And believe it or not, we do read email. So if you want to email us, it's gaminguncensored@gmail.com or the voicemail line at
509-GAME-210.
It does still work. And we are taking segments. If you want to call us, leave us a voicemail. We will take your segment, stitch it together, and put it in a show in the future. One very interesting thing about being in the same room is that we actually have time to put some of this stuff together, like the awesome intro that you just heard. So you might hear some more stuff from us in the next couple of days that you wouldn't normally hear, because there's no kids and there's no family that know other stuff around. It's just us. So please, please submit segments, do all that good stuff, because we might find a use for it in the next couple of days.
Yeah.
So definitely, definitely do that. For right now, that's pretty much it for this show. We have no idea what we're doing for the rest of the period, because we don't know what else there's going to be.
Yeah. We know the PC gaming show is happening on Saturday.
Yeah.
We'll do something with that. You may hear from us again before then. We have no clue. It's the weirdest E4 ever.
All I know is that it's 11 p.m. and we haven't played Final Fantasy yet, which means that I'm probably going to go get prepared for bed, and you're going to hang out in the chair that you're in right now.
And get Final Fantasy set up.
We're probably going to spend about 2 or 3 hours playing Final Fantasy and then sleep late in the morning.
Yes.
So there's that. I'm very excited, very happy. We're glad you're here. We hope you're having a good time. We definitely are. And for right now, we are Gaming Uncensored. It is Idiots Explaining Entertainment Extravaganza. And it's only on GamingUncensored.com. And we are out.
Brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.
So, this is something that I'm struggling with, and that's why I asked you this question. Because my little corner of the world is pretty good, especially now that you're here. We're in the same room. Everything feels good. I'm happy. It's all good. Although, Duff kept me up till about 3 o'clock yesterday morning. And so I haven't had a lot of sleep. A little rough on the sleep side of things. But we're drinking, and we have a fairly large bottle of booze. So that's going to help. But I have had a problem because I feel basically the same way, in that in the midst of all of the craziness that is going on, lots of people struggling, lots of people having issues, my world's pretty good. And it has been for the entirety of this whole COVID-19 racial injustice thing. And I kind of feel bad about it because I'm one of those white privileged people that you and I have been talking about. And so I have kind of struggled with that, seeing what everybody else is dealing with. And we've had big developments as of like yesterday. The Confederate flag is no longer welcome at NASCAR events, which is a huge, like, mind-blowing deal.
Yeah.
For both of us, because we're both from the South. And granted, I say that meaning that we're totally okay with the fact that NASCAR has decided to do this. Good on them. We feel good about that. But at 41 years old, that's not really something I expected to happen. And my little brain is kind of exploding a little bit.
Yeah, I was shocked by that and thrilled. I love it. The Confederate flag to me is just it's a terrible symbol of a lot of terrible things. When we lived at a different house in Dallas, our neighbor flew one, and it just was rough. Just to see the kind of banner of such racial injustice just like flapping in the wind, you know, like it just, yeah. It's a development that truly does feel shocking, as small as it is. Like NASCAR banning a flag seems like a pretty small thing.
It's not that big a deal, but it's huge.
But there's something like that. It feels like there's this cultural thing happening where a lot of people are saying, I think I get it more than I used to. And I see that just in my personal circle of friends and family and people I know who are saying things in support of a lot of this movement that I wouldn't have expected them to say 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, whatever it is. Like, it just, I don't know what it is about this moment, but there's something about this moment that feels like there's at least a little bit of traction. The length that we have to go to, like, truly, like, bridge the gap of racial injustice in this country is just massive. But, like, it feels like there's some momentum at least going in that direction, which in other times in recent memory with a lot of these similar things happening, that it just felt so helpless. Like, it feels like there may be a little hope on the horizon, that there's these things that the world is getting a little better.
So, a couple of things. I've spent the last couple of nights talking with Duff entirely too late. For those of you that don't know, we normally run production that talks about how Duff has basically provided a whole bunch of stuff.
It'll be at the end of the show.
And we're so thankful. But I spent the last couple of nights talking with Duff, and I was just curious about what Duff thought about all that is going on, because Duff, even though he would protest at this point, is in the United States military. He's been called up to active duty in the National Guard, and so he's like legit military, you know, and has been his whole life. And so I was curious what he thought. And he said something that I never thought of, because most of the time, I think the military is basically a conservative organization. And they have thoughts in a conservative way, a lot like my family does. A lot like I do in certain things. But I asked Duff what he thought, and he said, you know what? It made me sick, because I've spent my entire life in the military trying to show people that I'm there to protect them, I'm there to work with them, and in the span of 8 minutes and 42 seconds, it all went away. And so now, for the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years, there's going to be a whole lot of people that don't think about joining the police force, or don't think about joining the military, or don't think about doing some other public service thing that is vital to the United States because of what happened in the last 3 weeks. And I had his wife, Dawn, in the background, like, yelling as he's talking. We've gone through training for all of this. We go through hours and hours of training to know how to treat people, to know how to deal with a person who is sort of kind of hard to deal with. The word that came to mind there was resisting, but I don't think George Floyd was necessarily resisting at the point that everything happened, so I don't want to say that, but there was definitely some pushback going on, and she said, "Look, we trained for this to not hurt people," and in 8 minutes, it all went away, and I don't know about you, but that touched me because, you know, there's a whole lot of police officers and a whole lot of people that feel the same way.
Sure.
That have worked their whole life to do this job, to protect people, to let people know, hey, I'm there. I'm here to do things for you, to protect you, to be there for you. And it's all gone in 8 minutes. And I don't know. That just got to me.
Yeah, I my perspective is I don't know. I agree with that for the most part. I think there's a whole lot more than that 8 minutes that has created issues.
I'm just saying that 8 minutes is what people said. That's enough.
Yeah. Like for whatever reason, it struck a chord that hasn't been as struck before, if that makes sense. But it's decades and decades of systemic issues that one incident helped bring to the forefront. I'm going to make a podcast recommendation, another gaming podcast that I listen to called Triple Click, which is a newish podcast that's Kirk Hamilton, Maddie Myers, and Jason Schreier, who all used to do a podcast at Kotaku. They all have since left Kotaku and are all doing their different things now. But they still are doing this podcast together. The podcast that they did this week was specifically about how police are kind of portrayed in video games. And each one of them talked about a game that has some kind of either you play a cop or a character that's adjacent to the police. And just talked about how even just culturally our expectations of how police behave and what is allowable in policing is just so far off from what we actually believe are good and right values. Like there's just this massive disconnect culturally that we've let build and build and build for so long. And it's just, there's a lot of reform that's needed there. This is hopefully, again, a catalyst point that will help bring some of that along. It's heartbreaking and tragic that it takes something like this to make that happen. But it's happening, and so I hope out of all of that, we see that progress.
And part of the issue is that I'm kind of split in the fact that I hate that all of this is happening. I hate that it took all of this. I hate that what happened had to happen to make this thing possible. But at the same time, there are a lot of good policemen and women who have worked their entire lives to do this job and do it well. And when I hear about the idea of defunding police departments who are, for the most part, there to protect us, I struggle. I don't know about you, because we're talking about people's jobs. And there are for every bad cop, there's 8 good cops. And I've just really struggled with that. When somebody talks about defunding the police department, that's a tough thing.
Yeah, I don't like the terminology defund the police. I highly support reducing funding for police departments. I know that's a splitting hairs difference there. I just think defund seems more absolutist. Police departments, again, this is getting way too in the weeds of something off topic from what we're going to talk about in just a second, I promise.
Yeah, we just had to talk about this because everything's going on.
But the fact is that for the most part, police departments are so overfunded with, you know, like military level equipment that they have that you look at. I saw a picture of the LAPD and they have Teslas as part of their fleet, you know, and it's just like when you see stuff like that and you see other government entities and organizations that are significantly underfunded, like there's a question about what is the purpose of our policing force. And like we always mentally go to like the most terrible things. Somebody's breaking into my house and trying to kill me. I hope a cop shows up with a gun to shoot them, right? But 90% of what police interactions are day to day aren't anything like that. And so why do we have this armed force that's walking around, you know, that whenever somebody has a medical emergency, you call 911 and a police officer shows up with a gun on their hip? Like, that doesn't make sense. That's not a situation where, you know, you need somebody that has a gun that's ready to go tackle the quote-unquote bad guy. You know, like, the way that we utilize this, like, ultimately violent force to do so many things that are just community-building things, it seems really off. Again, from what we would probably talk about our principles being of what we want American society to look like in kind of a utopian kind of way, and the way that our first responders to car wrecks are people with guns, you know, like it just, like there has to be a better way to accomplish a lot of things that they do with the same people, but just not in a situation where we're automatically getting to a point where we're a hair trigger away from violence in situations that don't need violence. Responding to somebody potentially a forgery call, and even though, I mean, it wasn't a weapons-drawn thing, but just that ended with such tragic violence, like, why? You know, like, what is the need for violence in that situation? And that happens every day across the board. And so if we can look at ways of what we consider our police force right now of being significantly reduced and reformed to a public service that's doing basically the same things without the kind of precipice of violence all the time, I think we as a society would be a lot better for that. Of course, we need people there that are going to be able to take care of extreme situations of and significantly dangerous people or destruction or whatever. But that's a very, very small percentage of what we're talking about as an overall police force.
And they need the equipment and the funding to do that. We're not saying that.
I disagree with you there. They don't. I mean, they need some, but they don't need what they have. Police forces are ridiculously oversaturated with weaponry and military grade vehicles. It's just nuts what our police force has. Like that we retire military gear to the police departments of our country of people who don't have that military training for that. It's just nuts, right? Like that's a crazy thing.
Yes, and I totally agree. And what I guess what I'm saying is that we have a lot of places in this country that are underfunded. Our education is greatly, greatly, greatly underfunded. And for those people, for those extreme circumstances, they need the equipment to do what they do without the idea of overkill. I want, if somebody breaks into my house, I want a police officer, whoever it is, to have whatever equipment they need to take care of that situation without it being overkill. Like, they don't need a tank.
Right.
But they need whatever equipment they need to do that job. I want our teachers to be funded the way they need to be funded. I want our principals to be paid the way they need to be paid. I want our police officers to be funded and paid the way they need to be paid. And I want everything done in a way that is reasonable, because I think what we get away from in this country is the ability to be reasonable with things. And I think our teachers are underfunded. I think our entire education is not reasonably set up. I think our police officers have maybe been told that the reality that they live in is the most important thing, and stopping crime is the most important thing. And a lot of days, it's really not.
Yeah.
Like.
And it's certain types of crime. Like, stopping certain types of crime is important. But there's lots of other types of crime that we don't put nearly the policing force behind to regulate, to try to limit.
Like cyber attacks and various things like that.
Yeah. Or white collar crime. Like, it's like there's more money that is illegally processed in white collar crime every year than there is stolen through violent crime. Not even close. But we don't put the same intensity towards that. And what I want to say here is, it's kind of rightfully so. Like, I'm arguing we should put less intensity towards dealing with petty crime, like forgery or something like that, than we often do. There are definite gradients. There obviously there are crime issues that we want to really deal with. But I think this is an American thing. I would love to hear from somebody that's not an American if you feel this way in your own country. But I feel like we just have this. I know, we have this violence fetish in America. We were a country founded through violence. And we've just never let go of that. Like, we've just always had that as part of our milieu. The fact that the Second Amendment is about guns, that is part of our founding. Not making a political statement one way or the other about that, but just saying that that's part of the American myth. It is founded in violence. And so we have this kind of absolutist idea, first, of who's good guys and bad guys. And I hate that, like, when you see we need a good guy to protect us from the bad guys, as if definitions are ever that easy, because who's the good guy and who's the bad guy with the cop and George Floyd, you know, like,
right.
Depends on who you talk to in that situation. But even then, the idea that we're always just a single moment away from our house being robbed, or our kids being abducted, or our grandmother's getting murdered, or whatever it is. Like, we just have this idea in our head that, like, crime is so prevalent and we're always at risk. And I'm not saying that crime doesn't happen. I've had my house broken into before. Like, it has personally happened to me.
Yeah.
But not, like, I was never at any risk of my safety or anything like that in that situation. But it's not something, like, somebody on your block isn't getting their house broken into every night, almost certainly. But there's a very small percentage of places in the country where there's anything like that happening. But we all have this kind of belief that we're always one moment from that. And security companies are selling security systems for your house, just say, you know, like, break-ins happen, blah, 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 so many times a year, blah, 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 to give you this sense that it's a constant thing. Like, you're always, you know, 1 second away
you're
from being
protected.
Murdered. And so
like,
we need...
If you buy this thing that we've got, you'll be protected.
Right, but aside from that, we need cops that have guns, that are always there, that we need this police state present to protect us in these situations. And we've fetishized that to the point that even systemically, police forces feel like they need to be that strong arm, that powerful arm of the law, that sometimes, you know, like consequences be damned, like are going to do whatever needs to be done, you know, to deal with a potential forgery, you know, which is not a situation that needs to be dealt with, or illegally selling cigarettes, or, you know, and people say, well, they shouldn't have been doing those things. Sure, but they also shouldn't die. I got a speeding ticket on my way here. I got pulled over from just right outside of Dallas on our way to drive up here, and had an interaction with a cop. And he was a professional. He did fine. He wasn't friendly. I don't think cops necessarily have a need to be like chatty, even though he did make a little small talk, which was a little weird. But all that to say, in that moment, I never had any fear for my life, and nor should I. Like, getting pulled over for speeding shouldn't be something that you're afraid of. I'm white. I have the privilege of not having to be in that situation. Somebody else getting pulled over in that same situation would be rightfully fearful of potential harm befalling them for just speeding. Again, like, should I have been speeding? No, I should have been obeying the speed limit. Like, he got me. I was speeding. Like, there's no, I was going 84 and a 65. Like, he got me. Was it close, right? I was doing something wrong. Not something I should die for. And again, I was never at any risk of that. But there are people that in that same situation would be at risk. And that's just nuts in this country. Just nuts.
And we apologize for taking 20 minutes to do this, but this is exactly why I wanted to do this. I knew that before you got here that I was going to ask that question, because I wanted to have that discussion about where things are, because for us, as I said at the beginning of this, the way things are right now feels different for us than it does a good portion of the rest of the country. And I want you guys to know, some is based on what Sam and other people have said on the Facebook, and some is that I want you guys to know that we're conscientious. But I want you to know we're paying attention, because our lives are good. Like, we can't complain. We don't have anything to bitch about. We're sitting here. We've had a good meal. We're drinking. We're having a good time. We feel good. Like, we got nothing to complain about. And I almost feel guilty about that at this point, because so much is going on in the country. But I want you guys to know that we're aware. So that's why we start that way. And from this point on, it's about E4. And off we go.